being a safe driver. Hitting the road isn't what it used to be, for better and for worse. Cars are safer today and more people are wearing seatbelts. But more people are also texting and driving. Citations for it in Maine have quintupled since 2014. Police officers issued more than 1,600 tickets for texting and driving last year in Maine, and most believe that's only the tip of the iceberg. Other modern-day concerns include driving under the influence of marijuana, Maine's aging population, and people using GPS devices, among other things. I'm Jennifer Rooks. What are your biggest concerns when you head out onto Maine roads? Do you see people texting and driving? Have you had a close call with another vehicle? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. You may encounter some slippery roads out there today, but winter weather is not the only driving hazard to worry about. Today, we're talking about all of the factors that go into safe driving, and we will learn some ways to prevent accidents. Joining me in the studio, Lieutenant Eric Baker, who is a state trooper with the Maine State Police. He patrols the Turnpike. And Pat Moody, public affairs manager and a driving instructor for AAA of Northern New England. I never knew you were also a driving instructor, Pat. As always, we want to hear from you. What are your winter driving questions? Are you concerned about an older family member who's still driving? Do you have comments about people who drive while using their smartphone? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. So when we planned this show, we didn't know we were going to have a winter storm, though it is February in Maine, so there's probably at least a chance of that. Eric, what are you seeing out there on the roads today?
Well, the roads have actually been pretty good overall. The main highway systems they've done a really good job getting out there, salting and sanding and plowing, but it's the secondary roads that we're seeing a lot more crashes just because of the slush buildup. People need to slow down during this weather time. The first of the year, the first snowstorm, it's usually the worst because people are learning how to drive again, it seems like. And as the season progresses, it seems to get a little bit better and people realize they need to slow down and give themselves some time.
And when you say people need to slow down, would you say most people slow down a little but not enough?
Correct. I mean, the recommended speed on the highways is 45 miles per hour. And sometimes that's even too fast depending on what we're traveling. And so people need to really adhere to 45. It's a recommended speed. And if you do get in a crash, we will put down that you are going too fast for road conditions.
Aha. Pat, how does this rank in terms of how much bad weather is a contributor to all the accidents AAA keeps track of? Or are there other bigger factors?
You know, one of the things that I love, the terminology you just used was crashes, right? They're not accidents. And that's one of the things that we're really trying to get away from is calling collisions accidents because they're 100% or for the most part, pretty close to 100% avoidable, preventable. We can do things to improve our risk out there and lessen our chance of being involved in a collision. But today, as far as AAA goes and being out there lending service and help to people with all the businesses and schools and everything that closed down today, it's a little bit quiet. It's taken a little longer to get to those calls to pull people out of ditches. We're anticipating tomorrow will be really busy, though.
Why is that?
Because tomorrow, people are digging out today. They might not quite get dug out tomorrow. They'll be calling to help them either get out of their driveway, off the edge of the road, or whatnot. And when you talk about crashes in general, one of the things that just absolutely blows my mind is that we have about 40,000 people every year in this country that die in car crashes. And if you have a hard time picturing that, think of Fenway Park. And that's what Fenway Park filled to capacity would be.
You know, every time I hear about a fatal car accident, which involves somebody being ejected from the vehicle, I think that means they weren't wearing their seatbelt. Am I right?
I would say 99% of the time that's true. It's a very rarity that they could slip out. Part of it is maybe they may not have actually been seatbelted properly in the car. And some people will take their shoulder belt and they'll put it down in front of them instead of wearing it across their shoulder like they're supposed to. And that can cause problems. But you're right. A lot of the times it's they're not wearing their seatbelt, and we will see an ejection through the sunroof or through a side window.
Mm. You know, cars are so much safer than they used to be. I'm an old enough reporter that I remember when airbags were first sort of in cars. And I remember state troopers being amazed at how people would walk away from accidents that they wouldn't have before the invention of the airbag. But does that make people drive differently? Do people drive with a little more swagger and a little less caution than they ought to?
Well, you know, there's a lot of technology, and we do know that this technology is making vehicles safer. At one point, it was about surviving, more survivable when you get into a crash. And now this advancement is actually trying to avoid the crash altogether. So I think, yeah, you're right. There is some people that look at this and say that I can do other things because my car is going to help me avoid this. What we're trying to get that message out is these advanced driving systems that are incorporated in the vehicle are there to aid you. They're not to replace the attentive driver. But everything from the adaptive cruise control, the blind spot monitoring, you know, the alert system, crash alert system, all of those things are in place to give you a little heads up. They're not to replace you paying attention and doing what you're supposed to be doing.
So let's talk about texting and driving. I recently rode on a bus. Gives you a different perspective on the road, the cars that are on the road with you. I'm sure truck drivers have the same experience where they're looking down into the cars they're driving by. It's amazing how many people have their cell phone on their lap when they are driving. I know some of those people are following a GPS, but it seems to me a lot of people text and drive.
When we're looking at texting and driving, we also look at distracted driving, and it's actually easier for us to prove a distracted driving. It is less of a fine, but we also, part of the problem is that we have to have a primary offense in order to pull the vehicle over. So we have to follow those two different things and be able to charge someone with distracted driving. Texting and driving is a much harder to prove, and a lot of people will come up with the various reasons of why we may not be able to see their cell phone or what may be going on. So it's a tough law for us to actually enforce the way that it's written. So a lot of times we're actually charging people with distracted driving. We're seeing it all the time as well. We've been using unmarked vehicles that sit up a little bit higher with a couple of troopers in it, and we'll pull people over based on what we're seeing and try to videotape the car stop as it's taking place where we can show the judge what we saw as we're driving alongside of that vehicle.
So if you're in one of those vehicles and you're going out on a shift, are you pulling people over right away?
It happens fairly quickly, yeah. I mean, we see a lot of it. Just like, I mean, you could be stopped at a stoplight and you're seeing people on their phones. That's a violation. They can't be texting even while they're stopped at a stoplight. It's not happening. And then if you're under 18 years of age, you're not supposed to be on your phone whatsoever at that time.
1,600 citations last year.
Lot.
Tip of the iceberg, though, right?
It really is. And that's not, that's just, that's ones that we haven't even, we've summoned. There's ones that we've given the warnings to, which, you know, I hope that we give more summonses than warnings based on the fact that we know that we're going to create the behavior we want because the summonses seem to make it a little bit easier for people to understand that they're wrong.
Pat, what do you say to someone? And I know there are people like this in the audience who say, I don't text and drive that much, but when I do it really safely. I'm really careful.
You know, when we look at the whole scenario here, our cars have never been safer. Our roads have never been engineered safer. But we are having an increase in car crashes over the last few years that's just, it's amazing. And the one factor that comes into place is the driver is not safer. And we know that 94% of all crashes that happen are the result of driver behavior. So someone that says that they can interact with their cell phone, some of the AAA studies that we recently did was that interaction at a stoplight. It's about a 27-second latency where you can actually get back that cognitive load, that focus that you have on driving. It takes you about 27 seconds to get back on task after you've made that text message or whatever you're doing on your smartphone. So you're missing really valuable information in those blocks or even, you know, quarter of a mile.
So that's interesting. You're at a stoplight. You know that stoplight, and you know it's a long stoplight. So you pull out your phone and see if anyone's tried to text you. You're saying that it's going to take 27, there's 27 seconds worth of information you're missing by looking down?
And that's, I call it your hangover. You know, AAA's in the middle of a campaign right now. It's called Don't Drive Intoxicated, Don't Drive Intexticated. It's the same thing. So you're having that hangover of distraction that's really taking your mind away from everything that you should be doing.
All right. Well, speaking of texting and driving, on the line with us now, State Senator Bill Diamond. Thanks for joining us, Senator Diamond.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. I'm glad to be here.
You've passed bills already to reduce distracted driving in Maine, including texting while driving, though I understand 2 years ago a bill that you got passed was vetoed by Governor LePage. What are you introducing this session?
The bill I'm introducing this session is essentially the same bill I did last time. As you mentioned, it was passed by the Senate, passed by the House, and we even overrode the veto in the Senate. Couldn't quite get there in the House. So there's a lot of support. There was then, and I believe there is now. But it's essentially the same bill, working with the Department of Public Safety and Pat Moody on AAA. And I think that we'll have a chance to make a good case.
So what exactly will the bill change? Already it's not okay to text and drive in Maine. It's against the law. What will be different?
Well, the difference is you cannot hold your electronic device. And right now, as you mentioned, you can hold the phone and punch in numbers. That's legal. That's calling. But if you're holding the phone and punching in letters and texting, that's illegal. And as Lieutenant Baker, I'm sure, knows that's a very fine line to distinguish between the two. And what's happened is that our phone, even in the last 2 years, has become so much more usable for things such as watching movies, watching games, browsing, taking photos, doing all the things that these great phones do, and that's just added distractions, serious, serious, life-threatening distractions to the driver.
So, Senator Diamond, under your bill, if someone wants to use their smartphone as a GPS, does it need to be, you know, sort of on a stand on the dash as opposed to being held in your hand?
Yep, they're very inexpensive little dashboard mounts you can put on and just stick your phone there, and you can do all the things you would do if it was built into the dashboard anyway. So this really focuses on removing the electronic device from the hands while you're driving. Put both hands on the wheel or at least look ahead and not be holding something else. And as somebody else has pointed out, that really doesn't solve the entire problem because cognitively, if we're on the phone, we're really not paying full attention to that area in front and on side of us when we're driving.
So how bad is distracted driving here in Maine? How do we compare with the rest of the country? Do we know?
Well, I don't know. AAA may have a better answer, or Department of Public Safety may. But I can tell you this. I've done my own informal surveys, going up and down the turnpike every day. And there was a couple of times when I observed people going by me, and me going by them, of course, if they're going less than the speed limit. And I would notice that about half of the people on one morning had a phone in their hand doing something. So that, I'm sure, is a much higher result than most surveys will show. But that just struck me as, boy, we've got a serious problem. It's not just in Maine. Thank goodness the other four states in New England, other than Maine and Massachusetts, have already passed a ban on handheld phones. So this is such a serious issue, and I think it's getting much, much worse.
All right. Before we let you go, I want to know if you have any other driver safety legislation in the works this session.
Well, I have one that I think Lieutenant Baker might like. It's going to strengthen the penalties for those who do not move over when driving down the highway or the roads, and a police officer or other people have someone on the side of the road for whatever purpose. We've noticed that that's become more serious. People are not pulling over and away from the stopped vehicles and the people beside the road as much as they should. So I'm trying to talk about that, and probably in the committee, Transportation Committee, we may increase some of the fines on that to get people's attention.
And all right.
The other serious one, just for a second, is that the illegal passing of school buses, that's becoming much more prevalent.
Thanks so much for calling in. I know you're in the middle of a lot of work up there today. That was State Senator Bill Diamond, also former Maine Secretary of State, calling in today. And he brought up a topic I know you want to talk about, Pat, and this is that it is the law to move over if you see flashing lights on the side of the road. Yes, both of you want to talk about this. Go ahead.
That's correct. Recently, we've had two major crashes there. Our troopers were hurt. One was people failed to slow down, and they failed to move over. And it is it's serious where people are going to get killed because of us, people not moving over, given the people that work out there the opportunity to do their job. And it's not just police. It is firefighters. It is your wrecker operators, your plow people, the amber lights that are flashing. The law states that you must pull over far enough away safely, so if the vehicle is to the right side of the road, you have to move to the farther left that you possibly can. And if you can't move over because of traffic, it states that you must slow down and proceed with caution past that person working on the side of the road.
And would you say it's also good practice if you just see a car stopped on the side of the road to pull over?
It is very good practice. It should just be ingrained in us that if we see something pulled over to the side, give them space and give them time. And time, I mean, by slowing down.
And this is a big campaign for AAA, yes, Pat?
Absolutely. We've actually marked up most of our AAA-owned tow trucks with messaging about slow down, move over. And one of the things that I blew my mind, because I'm not out on the road working, you know, with members' vehicles, but I did stop and help with a friend's tire. This was about 2 years ago. And it wasn't on a highway. It was on a secondary road, town road, 202 in Windham. And the amount of people that would come within inches of me as I'm trying to change this tire, and a lot of times it was the distraction factor where they're not recognizing how close they're getting to the person working on the side of the road. And I think I see that correlation between all those bills that Senator Diamond is working on, that distraction, whether it's getting too close to a tow truck or a law enforcement officer or whoever else is working roadside, or going around a school bus with the lights on, distraction. We are so distracted. And when it comes down to us and the research that we've done, what we recognize is that we live in this kind of world that it's do as I say, not necessarily as I do. Most of the time when we do our surveying, we find out that people say 96-97% of respondents say you should not be texting and driving, you should not be doing this. But then when you turn around and ask them if they've done it, it's like 30%, 35%, 40% are saying that they've done it in the last year. So that's something that we really need to change, and that's why we're focused on this Don't Drive Intoxicated, Don't Drive Intoxicated campaign, drawing the correlation that you wouldn't drink and drive, so why do you take that risk? Because the outcome is essentially the same.
All right. Trooper Baker, I want to ask you about, Lieutenant Baker, I want to ask you about traveling in the right lane versus the left lane. Is it the law that one must travel in the right lane unless passing?
Correct. That is the law. If you're traveling, it has to be of a speed zone of 65 or greater that takes place in, and you have to travel to the far right of the road unless you are passing, and then you can move to the left lanes to pass.
I think a lot of people don't know that.
A lot of people don't. We see it all the time, and on a three-lane highway, you'll see people that get into that far left lane and they just stay there and they're not passing, and they may be traveling just about the speed limit or just under, which causes issues besides self of what's going on behind them, where we may have crashes just because people are coming up too fast in that what they believe is their passing lane, and then we're having crashes based on that as well.
Well, there's so much to talk about. We still haven't talked about marijuana, teen drivers, older drivers. So we have to go to a break. When we come back, we'll talk about those topics and more. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Taggart Construction in Freeport, working to create healthy homes that respect the environment since 1994. TagCon.com. And InSource Renewables, committed to providing renewable energy solutions that support Maine's communities, workers, and the planet. InSourceRenewables.com.
On the next Fresh Air, how Russian-style kleptocracy has infiltrated the U.S. We talk with Franklin Foer, national correspondent for The Atlantic. We'll also discuss the latest news about the Mueller investigation and Paul Manafort. Foer's article about Manafort is nominated for a National Magazine Award. Join us.
You can listen to Fresh Air tonight at 7 here on Maine Public Radio. This spring and summer, Maine Public News will be on the road, stopping in communities all around the state to talk to you about the important issues in your community and what topics are most important for us to report on. More on that as we get closer, but right now, as a lead-up to the tour, we have a statewide survey we'd like you to fill out. It only takes a few minutes. Visit mainpublic.org and click on Events and the Tell Me More survey. Or if you aren't online, call Audience Services, 1-800-884-1717, and we'll get one right out to you. Thanks. Your participation will ensure Maine Public News serves you better in the months ahead.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, all about safe driving. Joining me today, Pat Moody, Public Affairs Manager and Driving Instructor for AAA of Northern New England, and Lieutenant Eric Baker, State Trooper with the Maine State Police. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Pat, you said something interesting to me during the break that I want to have you repeat. You said everybody thinks they're a good driver.
Yeah, our surveys show that about 80% of people think that they're an average driver. And, you know, I'm not super good at math, but that doesn't work.
Okay, we're turning now to Lori Parham. She's calling from AARP. Hi, Lori. Welcome back to Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer.
Let's talk about older drivers. What are the biggest concerns when seniors get behind the wheel?
Well, there are a lot of assumptions that are made about older drivers, and they're actually not that true. We often hear that just because someone is older, they should no longer be driving. Where the real concern comes in is that older people tend to be more frail. And so while they are often the safest drivers on the road, if they are in a crash, they have a greater chance of being injured or not living through the crash. And so that's why we spend a lot of time. I know you've got an instructor with you in studio, and we have our driver safety course that I just wanted to mention. We've got volunteers who are teaching this course across the state and really work to ensure that folks of any age really have all of the skills they need when they're behind the wheel.
Sure. And I'm going to bring you into this, Pat. Doesn't AAA also have special driving classes for folks as they age? Because you change, your reaction time changes, your ability to see in darkness changes.
Right. There's a lot of changes that happen. And you know, one of our focuses is to make sure that people understand that driving isn't a function of age. It's a function of ability. So, you know, as we age, things change. Health concerns can crop up, and sometimes subtly, and you might not even recognize it. So, yes, AAA has and AARP have both a great course that you can go into the classroom. I believe AARP also has an online. I know AAA has an online version of this here in Portland. We also offer an adult driving audit where you can come to the office, work with a state licensed instructor. They'll take you out for about an hour and give you kind of an overview. It's confidential. It's not reported to the state. It tells you kind of how you did at that point in time, which might be different from other points in time. But it's a major thing that the state of Maine has to address, because we've got by 2030, we're going to have over 25% of the population are going to be 65 and older, which is greater than anyone else. We're the oldest state in the nation per capita.
Lori, I want to read to you an email that came in before the show, and this is something I'd usually do a little later in the program, but since I have you on the line, I'd like your thoughts on it. This is from Larry. He says, the state should come up with more thoughtful, respectful, and humane ways to deal with senior drivers. Presently, suspect seniors are required to be retested, and if they refuse or fail to pass, they get a very nasty letter from DMV demanding that they turn in their license or else. This happened to my mom, who was entering the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. She became terrified of having to be retested and decided not to do it. When the nasty letter came, I contacted officials at DMV telling them that although my mom agreed to give up driving, in fact, we took her keys, she wanted to retain her license as a keepsake. I informed the state that we would not return the license, but if the state would like to send the police to mom's apartment to seize it, we would not cause trouble. After this, I received a nice call from DMV, who admitted that the state would never physically seize a license in this matter. The license would just be canceled in the system. The state should give seniors whose driving skills have become questionable two choices. First, the current one of required testing, and the second, a form by which the person can voluntarily agree to relinquish their driving privilege. whereupon the director of DMV would send them a nice letter thanking them for their many safe years on the road and their difficult but courageous and generous decision to retire as a driver. The senior could be given a Maine Driver Emeritus sticker to affix to their now invalid license.
Well, that, Jennifer, I mean, what a wonderful note to send in. And having just in the last year worked to convince, and it's so important that the individual feels like it's their decision, but convince my mother-in-law to give up her keys, her car, and that loss of independence, it's so tough. And we need to be careful and thoughtful about how we do it. And that's why, and you all had a great show last week on rural transportation, which so often is an issue of senior transportation. And that's why we also have to be looking at a system, a transportation system that works for everyone, for folks who are still driving, but for those who are no longer driving. And we have a lot of folks who tell us that they may drive in the summer months, but just because winter adds additional challenges and the nighttime, the darkness adds additional challenges, they'll choose not to drive as much at night or during the winter. So a lot of folks do self-regulate, but we really have to talk seriously about changes to the overall system in Maine if we're going to be prepared to ensure that these individuals have a way to get around.
Well, Lori, as always, thank you so much for calling in to Maine Calling. That was Lori Parham, State Director for AARP in Maine. We'll go to Randy Greason now from Vacation Land Driving Academy. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Jennifer.
So you teach many first-time teen drivers. You must be a very patient and brave man. What are some of the top safety concerns you encounter with young drivers?
Well, first of all, full disclosure, I was the driver's ed instructor for Alex and Joey Hahn, so I have a little bit of a personal connection to your
crew.
Maine
Calling, yes, Cindy's kids. I'm sure they were fantastic drivers.
Oh, just like Cindy. As driver's ed teachers, you know, we are the gatekeepers to driving, and anyone who wants to get a license before the age of 18 must, by law, take driver's ed. I'd say we face some unique challenges as drivers and instructors as they're trying to develop safe, defensive drivers. Teenagers typically have a strong sense of immortality, very susceptible to peer pressure, suffer often from a sense of overconfidence. Pat talked about 80% of the drivers judging themselves above average. I also need to understand it takes about 5 years of driving to become what we would characterize as an average driver. So there's quite a learning curve there. Probably the one of the biggest single deterrents as well is that studies show that the biggest single influence on how safe a teenage driver is going to be is the role model that their parents provided. And a parent who is patient and law-abiding and even-tempered is much more likely to have a child who is the same. Another thought is, as we deal with brain development, even though a lot of personality components are set in stone, essentially, by the time we see them at 15 or 16, you know, their attitude towards authority, use of drugs, and so on, that the brain development as it relates to risk-taking, the prefrontal lobe, is still very much a work in progress. And in fact, the prefrontal lobe really doesn't fully form in females till early 20s and males till later 20s. And the prefrontal lobe is what controls risk-taking, and it helps explain some of the poor decisions that young drivers are inclined to make. And lastly, as a result of this, and not surprisingly, despite our efforts, 16-year-old drivers who have the benefit of remarkable reflexes, excellent night vision, and so forth, 16-year-old drivers are statistically the most dangerous age group on the road today, followed closely by 17-year-olds and followed closely by 18-year-olds. So we as driver's ed instructors see our task as pretty monumental, and take the challenge very seriously, but recognize that we certainly have some major obstacles that we need to tackle along the way.
Well, Randy, thank you so much for calling in. And yes, I am. I agree with everybody who says it takes a special person to teach teenagers how to drive. I really appreciate the call. Pat, you also teach teenagers how to drive.
Yeah, absolutely. And Randy, that was a great snapshot of you know, kind of where teens are and the important role of parents in the process. Maine has a driver ed curriculum and also teen driving laws in place to help keep teens safe and encourage parental interaction. And one of the things that we do know is that fewer and fewer, and this is across the country, fewer and fewer kids are taking driver's ed and missing out on that learning opportunity as well as the GDL process. And they wait until they're 18 to get driver's ed. So it's an effort that we really need to start looking at and trying to encourage more teens to take driver's ed and also parents to embark upon a parent-teen driving contract to set the rules of the vehicle and expectations and what the consequences are if those aren't followed.
And the state police, we actually developed a program by retired Major Randy Nichols where we actually will call the parent if we stop someone that's under the age of 18 and let them know that we've had interaction with a child for a violation, whether they received a ticket or not, that we're letting the parent know. So that way...
So even if there's a warning...
Yeah, we can give them a call and let them know that we're dealing with their children and that their driving is not up to par. And hopefully the parents will step in so it keeps them on top of what's going on within their own child's life.
Randy, thanks so much for calling in. We'll go to Helen calling from Norridgewalk. Hi, Helen. Go ahead.
Hi. I was happy to hear Bill Diamond talk about distracted driving and... I have further concerns about it because of the big push to have hands-free telephones and texting in your car, because I think your mind is what's really important. And my kids say, oh, well, you listen to the radio, and apologies to you, Jennifer. I do listen to the radio, but I can turn you off in my head if I'm driving and I need to respond to something. Whereas if you're talking on the phone to somebody, you don't have the same ability to turn off whatever is going on. And I just think we need to not use any of these devices when we're driving.
Thanks for your call, Helen. Pat's nodding.
Yeah, the cognitive distraction is a major issue. And we worked with the University of Utah researcher David Strayer to take a look at distractions and then try to categorize them like hurricanes and seeing what the lowest level is in, you know, from listening to a talk radio, which is down on the lower end, which you might be happy to hear. Yeah. handheld and hands-free phoning, which was when it comes to phoning, that's actually talking on the phone. It was about comparable. When you really started to get into those really distractive, overloaded cognitive functions, it was doing those interactive infotainment systems that cars are coming up out with now. So we've really worked on trying to understand those infotainment systems, the level of cognitive demand based on the different types, because there's all kinds of different types of infotainment systems and manufacturers out there, and get the word out that just because your car is equipped with this hands-free technology doesn't mean it's safe to use. So that's a really important message to get out there, especially with Bill Diamond and his effort, which we're supporting because it gets that device out of the hand. We're not saying that it's safer to go and do it this way.
Helen, thanks for your call. An email from Mike. Could you please tell us what percentage of crashes are caused by tailgating? What can be done to discourage tailgating?
I don't have a percentage here, but what I can tell you is that a lot of our crashes are secondary crashes, and meaning, in other words, we're at a crash scene itself. Now traffic is slowing greatly, and sometimes it's coming to an abrupt stop, and that's when we start to see bigger accidents and a lot more crashes. It's a secondary effort. So what we try to do is follow what's called TIMS, Traffic Incident Management System, where we're trying to open the road up as quickly as possible but make sure it's safely done at the same time. And it works well for us, but we can always improve on that.
All right. We'll go to Judy calling from Rockport. Hi, Judy. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm guessing you all have experienced seeing a patrol car, not necessarily a state police car, but other municipal and county patrol cars on the side of the road, either attending to someone who they've pulled over or sitting there because of road work or just checking, and are completely blinded by the rapidly strobing blue lights on the car so that you can't, it wipes out the entire visual field.
Sure. I've had that experience at night where the flashing lights are a distraction. How do you decide which lights to use in which circumstance?
Well, it really depends on up to the officer, the trooper, the deputy, whoever it may be, of where they're at and what's going on within that. We feel that the more lights that we can have out there, the safer it is for us. That's why if you can't see, hopefully you are slowing down and hopefully you are moving over, which will give you it. We understand that. We try not to shine the lights into people's eyes. We do have roof racks, and then we can actually put on just certain lights at certain times. But it all depends on what the police officer feels is necessary for their safety.
Judy, thanks for your call. We have so many more calls and emails. We'll get to as many of them as we can. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Salaam Circus School in Biddeford, committed to preserving and sharing the technique and traditions of the circus arts. Classes at salaamcircus.com. AARP Maine, advocating on the issues that matter to Mainers over 50 and their families. AARP.org/ME. And St. Mary's Health System Orthopedics, helping patients live their best lives in motion. Online at findabonedoctorme.org.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, activist and scholar Angela Davis and historian Ibram X. Kendi talk to Jeff Chang about the history of racism in America and the interconnections between capitalism, sexism, and racism. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
Coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Remember MacGyver?
He will find himself, in all kind of crazy places.
All right, MacGyver, think.
And he will just look around.
Rope, a smoke alarm.
That dude made like jetpacks out of toilet rolls.
Yes, yes.
But against all the odds,
yeah,
he can do it.
It just might work.
I'm Guy Raz, making the most of what we've got. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Tonight at 11, here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, driver safety. Joining us today, Lieutenant Eric Baker, who is a state trooper, and Pat Moody with AAA of Northern New England. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to an email from Todd in Bristol. He says, I've cycled the same 25-mile route near Damariscotta several times a week for almost 20 years. Only in the last 3 years have I had several very close calls with being hit by motorists. I recently spent nearly $300 on two continuous recording video cameras mounted on my bike, one facing forward and the other backward for the evidence needed, hopefully not to prove my wrongful death. We do shows on cycling every summer on Maine Calling, and there are a lot of scared cyclists out there.
Absolutely. I'm a cyclist myself, and I can understand what he's talking about, having a lot of close calls. There are a lot of nice devices out there that you can put on your bicycle, but the drivers have to know they have to move over and give a minimum of 3 feet to go by a cyclist. But cyclists also have to follow the rules of the road as well, and we both have to work in cooperation to be safe out there.
Yeah, an email from Sherry. Could your guests address the alarming number of pedestrians struck and killed by drivers on main roads, probably the result of distracted driving and or excessive speed just this week near St. Joseph's College?
It's hard for us to comment on those types of crashes when we're not the investigating agencies, but there are obviously factors. Some of it's distracted driving. Some of it is speed. But it's also, when are people crossing the road? Where do they see? Where are they at? It's time, day, location. So there are a lot of multitude of factors.
In the same breath, too, it's distracted walking is also a factor that's coming into play. Not saying that, we get distracted drivers, we get distracted walkers, and, that's just a recipe for bad things to happen.
An email from Susan: would you please have your guests remark on drivers entering from a ramp? I do not believe it, but someone told me there's been a shift in the driver's ed instructions to inform student drivers that it is a yield, which means one does not have to stop as the drivers on the interstate will move over. I have yet to travel the interstate without at least one close encounter with a ramp situation. Okay, which of you wants to go first?
I'll start with the best practice, and then he's got that 29A. That's the law book beside him that he can kind of tell you what the law is. But yeah, when we're talking to whether it be an older driver or a younger driver, the goal is to keep everybody moving, moving safely. So as cars are entering from an on-ramp, you want to do your best to move over, give them that lane to merge on, or slow down and give them space to get in. And at the same time, as you're kind of entering the highway, you don't want to try to enter from a stop speed. So you're trying to match that 55, 65, 70, whatever the speed may be, and trying to match that speed from a stop is going to be extremely challenging. So it's a best practice to, you got to stop ultimately if there's no room for you to get on, because you have to yield the right of way. But it's best practice to work together to get up there on the highway.
And I agree with Pat 100%. It's really going onto a highway system at 70 miles per hour and merging into traffic, people do have to yield the right of way that are coming on. But it is good driver etiquette if you're able to move over to allow people to merge in and everybody's happy and safe.
Email from Tom: I put on hundreds of miles every day as a technician, and one of my pet peeves is people not signaling their turns. What really bothers me is when I'm behind a student driver and they are not instructed to use their turn signals. You know, Tom, I agree with you. And one thing I've said to my kids and others is it's the ultimate laziness to not move one finger to put on your turn signal. I mean, how lazy do you have to be, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's... That's from day one, the first lesson that you get in the car, you're talking about signaling. So, and I have a 15-year-old that is now driving too. So she just went through driver's ed and she's on her permit right now. But you have to constantly remind them, you know, signal, and do it in enough time to give advance warning to the car behind you.
And it's not just signaling, but they also need to look over their shoulders and make sure that they have the room to make those turns as well. And that with their switching lanes or anything of that nature.
Liz on Facebook: why don't drivers use headlights at dawn, dusk, or in fog, rain, and snow, or when heading away from the blinding sun so that oncoming drivers can see them? And do drivers not know that using running lights does not necessarily mean that your rear lights are on?
Yeah, the headlights are hugely important. You know, in the state, you're supposed to have your headlights on when your windshield wipers are on. You can be seen at such a greater distance in the daytime with your headlights on as well. One of the research projects that we just finished up was looking at headlight effectiveness in older cars that have you seen the yellowing on the lens?
Yep.
So that yellowing that happens from the oxidation from the sun creates a kind of a barrier for that light to get through. And you can lose up to 80% of your headlights effectiveness if those headlights are hazed over like that. So headlight maintenance is also, I know that's not exactly where she was going with it, but it's really important from a motorist perspective. If your car is 3 to 5 years old and your headlights are a little hazy, that you have those addressed.
And we see it all the time with the running lights from people in the urban areas where they forget to turn on their headlights and they're using their running lights, but they have no taillights. And we see it all the time when we stop them and make sure they get their lights on.
Is your advice just to drive with your lights on all the time?
Most cars today have the switches where they're automatic. They come on at a certain level. So it is a lot safer if you do drive with headlights on.
And you'll see those headlights, too. The technology, I don't know if you've noticed it, but the headlight that'll turn off while the blinker is on, because the LED, the brightness of that headlight is so bright that you might not be able to see the blinker. So the car is designed to actually shut the headlight off as the blinker is on.
Margaret in Orland, go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, certainly I've heard all over the state people complaining about the speeding on secondary roads. And we're experiencing big time here in Orland on the Castine Road down to Maine Maritime Academy. And people can't get out of their driveways. They can't go to their post office, to their mailboxes on the road without feeling they're taking their lives in their hands. And many elderly people that live on the road are isolated. They can't get out of their houses and walk over to their neighbors. They can't get the exercise they need because in order to take a walk, they have to get in their car and go somewhere else. It's really intolerable. Now, these secondary roads are not good. They have very, very poor shoulders. Ours is about 6 inches. That doesn't do anything. And so here in Orland, we've been trying to get some coverage by patrolmen, but we're told that they don't have enough policemen in the county to cover this, and they can't recruit more because people don't want to join the police force anymore. It's too dangerous.
Sure, Margaret. We've heard this complaint from all over the state. You know, and I think it's true. There's so many roads out there that have almost no shoulder, and whether you want to walk or ride your bike or pull over to change a tire, it's dangerous.
It is very dangerous. The secondary roads are very tough. I hope when people are walking, they're walking facing traffic for they can see the oncoming car if you're going to be out walking. We don't have enough police officers in the state of Maine to cover everything. We try the best that we can with the complaints that we get and then try to focus those efforts in those areas that we feel where most crashes are occurring. But we understand what she's saying.
All right, Margaret, thank you. An email from WH. As a farmer who often has to drive a tractor with equipment hitched behind down a state highway, it is all too apparent that many drivers nowadays do not understand hand signals. If I give a signal for a left-hand turn into a field, 9 out of 10 times a driver behind me thinks I'm signaling that it's clear to pass as I turn left. I am in great danger of being run into. For self-protection, I have to move to the middle and take up a whole road before signaling, even if there's a blind corner not far ahead. I would add that since cars were air-conditioned, drivers are cocooned and seem seemingly much less aware of their immediate surroundings. WH, I have never thought about that before, and I will think about it differently now. If I'm behind farm equipment, I will be looking for hand signals.
It's something that's taught in driver's ed, but you know, for a lot of us, driver's ed was a long time ago, and you don't hear about these things until it's in the news. So, you know, we recommend that you do brush up on your knowledge about the driving laws. You can check on the Bureau of Motor Vehicle websites. You could take a defensive driving course, which AAA offers defensive driving courses as well, classroom and online. And the Bureau of Highway Safety offers a Maine Driving Dynamics course. So if you are wondering about brushing up on some skills, that's a good option.
Correct.
Something we haven't talked about yet is the reality that in Maine now it's legal to smoke marijuana. Are you seeing any difference on the roads, Lieutenant Baker?
We are seeing a lot more people under the influence. The problem is that, like alcohol, there's a 0.08. At this current time, there is no level for THC, which is saying what it's against the law. So it really comes down to what we see when we're putting them through field sobriety, and then we have to bring in a drug recognition expert that follows through with it and determines whether or not they were unable to drive based on what they have in their system.
So tell us, how does smoking marijuana or using an edible change your ability to drive?
It slows your reaction times down. It doesn't let you pay attention to what's going on. Everything seems to be much slower than what we see, and they're not comprehending what's going on out in front of them.
Okay, and I want to, on this sort of same subject matter, one of the things that's been in the news a lot is whether or not to have a deposit on these little liquor bottles called nips. But a point that's been made is that nips are being found on the side of the road, and it's probably because people are drinking and driving. Are you seeing the effect?
We're seeing the effect of everything. It's a combination of it all. We do see the nips on the side of the road all the time. Obviously, driving under the influence is a 0.08 or greater. But we are seeing we have a few troopers out on the turnpike that are very good at determining people that are under the influence.
We're going to go to Larry in Bangor. Larry, if you could be quick, that'd be great. We're near the end of the show.
Yeah, I'm one of those old duffers of whom you speak. Where do you get those tests? You can test yourself, you said. And number two, you said something about driving in the center of the road. The center of the road is generally in far better shape than the rest of the road. So if there's no traffic, I try to stay very much to the center of the road. Obviously, if there's traffic, I don't want to get killed, nor do they. So I stay away.
So 2 points. Pat, you want to say again where you can find driving classes? Are they only in the Portland area or throughout the state?
Sure. Safe driving for mature operator. There's a course. We hold them in different places around the state, but AAA.com, you can find the information on that. But you can also take them online as well. There's some really interactive, interesting video footage in those online courses if that's something that you're interested in. And AARP also offers them around the state as well.
And driving the middle of the road, it is pothole season. And boy, are there some giant ones right now.
It's true, but it's time and reaction of what you have. And if you're going to drive towards the center of the road, just be aware that if you get in a crash, that you're going to be the cause of the crash if you're driving over that center line.
All right, one more question. Marty on Facebook says, whatever became of the rule of a car length between vehicles for every 10 miles per hour? So many people tailgate up close and sometimes end up passing within inches to spare when they pull out to pass. That's still the rule, isn't it, Pat?
It's not. Marty, I got a new one for you. So it's you want to do – we don't do the car length. It's too hard to judge. So we're looking at seconds.
Oh,
so
that's right.
You want to be 3 to 4 seconds behind the car that you're following. So find a fixed object. Once it passes it, start counting and give yourself that much room, 3 to 4 seconds.
Okay, and not 1, 2, 3, 4, but 1, 1,000, 2, 1,000,
exactly.
3, 1,000. Marty, thanks for your question. And I want to wrap up. We started talking about the weather. And even though by tomorrow morning this storm will have passed and the roads, the highways that you patrol will be clear, you want to tell people to do something today.
Yes. The public needs to clean off all their windows. The law states you have to clean off all the windows on your motor vehicle before traveling out on the highway. But also clean off the roof of your vehicles. With the rain on top of the snow, it creates ice. The tractor-trailer trucks as well. Give yourself distance and space tomorrow from any tractor-trailer truck because the law doesn't require them to remove the snow or ice from the top of their trucks. And we see a multitude of crashes coming in of windshields and damage to vehicles because of the ice coming off the top.
That's really good information. So it is not the law to remove snow from the top of a tractor-trailer truck, probably because it's just so difficult to do so. But that means huge pieces of snow and ice can come flying off of a tractor-trailer.
Right. And it's not the fluffy snow, obviously. We're talking about the ice that's coming off. That's what we're seeing. And we've seen a couple reports recently of ice going right through the windshield of vehicles. So you've got to give yourself the space from those tractor-trailer trucks. In New Hampshire does have a law which requires everybody to clean off the top of their vehicles. We don't have that here in Maine.
But it's still best practice.
Best practice.
And Pat, I know we just have a few seconds, but you've got something fun on your Facebook page, and we'll link that.
Right, yeah. And also that dry pavement is what I gave you, 3 to 4 seconds. Tomorrow and today, if you're driving down the road right now, you need to give 6 to 8 seconds distance between you and yourself, you know, the car you're following. But as far as our Facebook, yeah, we have a fun little thing that we'll put on our Facebook. You've got a little hand kind of spot that you cleared off the windshield. You get the whole windshield that you cleared off, and then you get the whole entire car. And we're asking you which one is the best option for tomorrow morning.
Well, thank you both for being here. A great program. Sorry we didn't get to all the questions. Not enough time. Pat Moody is Public Affairs Manager and Driving Instructor for AAA New England. Lieutenant Eric Baker, State Trooper with the Maine State Police. Lucy Suchek ran the board. Maine Calling's produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.